This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Almost every week now, it seems like we hear news about America's worsening problem with fat. This month alone, a new report from the Centers for Disease Control found that most Americans fail to find the time for even a moderate level of exercise. Researchers from the University of Pennsylvania compared portion size in Philadelphia and Paris. Guess which was bigger. And across the nation, there are reports about legislators taking aim at obesity with bills that would force restaurants to post nutrition information, limit the menus in schools, and allow consumers to sue food manufacturers. And amidst the glut of information, Americans keep getting bigger. Today we begin a series on this issue. We'll look at what government can and should do. We'll talk about how attitudes about overweight people are changing, and we'll hear what scientists are finding out about why people get fat and what they can do to prevent it. We start with the most vulnerable players in this battle, kids. By many estimates, 1 in 6 American children and adolescents are overweight. The fallout is increased risk for a host of physical and physiological problems, from type 2 diabetes to heart disease to depression. How to help these kids is our topic today, and we want to hear from you. If you're the relative of an overweight child and struggle with trying to help, if you've had success in helping a kid beat the odds, or if you are or were an overweight kid yourself, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now here in Studio 3A is Dr. Arthur Frank. He's medical director of the George Washington University Weight Management Program. And thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Your program is introducing a brand new program in September to help children and adolescents control their weight. What prompts this?
First, we have not dealt with it in the past, largely because we didn't feel that we were skilled and capable enough to deal with it, because it's such an extraordinarily difficult problem. But now we have to take it on because it's become such a pressing problem that we can't avoid it anymore. And one of the problems that we have had in the past is not dealing with the kids, but we've had such an exasperating time dealing with the parents and dealing with the families and dealing with the households. Because you can't deal with the child in isolation. You've got to deal with the household. You've got to deal with the school. You've got to deal with the community. And there's a whole series of complex factors involved in how a child eats. And children don't control their own lives as much as adults control their own lives. And they certainly don't control their eating patterns. They eat what gets put in front of them, and what gets put in front of them is prepared by others.
Let's start with the scale of the problem. How many kids are overweight today, and how have those numbers changed from just a few decades ago?
It varies a little bit depending on the statistics you're looking at, but it's reasonable to say that children in the age range of 6 to 19, about 15% are overweight, which is about triple what it was 30 years ago. So it's first, we have the enormity of the problem, and second, we have the dramatic increase in prevalence, which is sort of overwhelming, and it's creating a whole series of secondary problems for these children.
Again, definitions. Overweight?
Oh, it's a difficult definition, and what you've got to do is there's a whole series of ways of looking at it. But what you're looking at is the 95th percentile on the age and sex related. When you exceed the 95th percentile on the age and sex related statistical curve, or where you ought to be, then that's the definition of obesity or overweight for children.
Now, how does childhood obesity differ from adults who are overweight? I mean, children are still growing. Their metabolisms are a lot higher, but they don't even have the same number of fat cells as adults do, do they?
No, they are still growing, and they're still creating fat, and they're still growing muscle, and they're still changing their body. People don't change their bodies much beyond about age 20, but children are changing their body, and there is at least a chance of a child, an overweight child, not becoming an overweight adult. At age 4, even at age 4, an overweight child has about a 20% chance of becoming an overweight adult. And by the time you reach adolescence, an overweight adolescent has about an 80% chance of becoming an overweight or an obese adult.
And other than, you know, what are the risks? I mean, we described a couple of them, but diabetes is just the start of it, isn't it?
Diabetes is one, and it's, and perhaps in many ways it's the most prominent, it's the most pressing. But we have what we now call the metabolic syndrome. The metabolic syndrome is a combination of cardiac risk factors, impaired sugar metabolism, diabetes, hypertension, abdominal fat, increase in certain kinds of fat constituents. And the prevalence of the metabolic syndrome is ordinarily about what we're seeing, about 4% of all adolescents have the metabolic syndrome. This is a dramatic increase in prevalence of the metabolic syndrome in children where it was never seen before. And 30% of overweight children have the metabolic syndrome. 30%. This is an astonishing number compared to what we were seeing. The idea that you're going to see adult onset diabetes in a child was unheard of even a decade ago.
We want to spend most of our program today on how to help kids, and we're going to focus on families. As you mentioned, that's a critical issue. But first, let's talk about school. And here are some of the entries from the March 2003 Pittsburgh School District lunch menu. We don't mean to pick on them. It just happened to be the menu that we got off the World Wide Web today. On March 4th, the entree was meat and cheese nachos. On March 10th, colossal burger. On March 26th, double hot dogs. Now, it's entirely possible that these are, you know, the healthful varieties of classic kids' food, but it does beg the question, are schools part of the problem?
Oh, yes. Schools are part of the problem. And again, I want to emphasize that children are often sort of the victim here, if you will. Children don't necessarily control their lives. They're often the passive participants of food that gets served to them and activity patterns that get created by others, schools, communities. So what they're doing is they're eating the food that their parents or their household serves. They're eating the food that the school serves. They're living in a community where activities are not available and where physical education doesn't exist anymore in school systems. The physical education program, which had been a mandatory, obligatory part of school systems even 10 or 15 years ago, is essentially been replaced by computer education. Now, maybe there's some value, surely there's some value in computer education, but it's displaced physical education. And what we've got is a bunch of kids who are not doing anything. They're not running around, partly because there's no place to do it and partly because there's no systematic way of doing it, or there's a decrease in the systematic way of doing it. Their families don't create the opportunities, don't reinforce the opportunities. And what we find is that when you are trying to get a child to change his eating behavior, you've got to get the whole household to change its eating behavior. You cannot change one person in the household, a child, and expect that child to be able to sustain a change in eating patterns unless you're getting everybody else in the family to do it. And oftentimes, everybody else in the family is not inclined to do it.
And that is a perfect opportunity to introduce our other guest in Studio 3A. Also with us is Sally Squires. She's a health writer for The Washington Post, and she writes a column called The Lean Plate Club. She's also co-author of The Stoplight Diet for Children, an 8-week program for parents and children. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Now, you got involved in writing a diet book for children based on personal experience.
I did. When I married my husband, I got two wonderful sons in the bargain, and one of them had been with a housekeeper at his mom's house, and she liked to cook a lot of high-fat foods, and so when he came to live with us, we looked and wanted to see what was out there, and I was familiar with Dr. Epstein's program.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the process of researching and writing the book, what did you learn about the importance, as Dr. Frank was just talking about, of the family in overweight children?
It's exceedingly important, and I think one of the things that confronts families today, we're all too busy, we're all too stressed, we don't sit down enough to have a regular meal. We're cooking less and less, and portion sizes are way out of control. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is go to a restaurant and see what that is. Dinner plates at home have gotten bigger. I mean, it's you know, we're eating too much, and we're eating too much, and we're not moving enough.
Stoplight diet. I guess we're all familiar with some version of the food pyramid. What's the stoplight diet?
Yeah, well, the stoplight diet precedes the food guide pyramid. That's how far back it went. And this was a program that was developed with NIH funding. That's the National Institute Institutes of Health at the University of Pittsburgh. And what happened was they took overweight kids and they worked with their families. The program was designed, these kids often didn't read. They were as young as six. So the program was designed to take all the food we eat and divide it into three simple categories based on a stoplight. Everybody knows that. It's really easy. So red foods, which aren't actually red in color, but they're very high in calories. Yellow foods are what most of us eat. So that's chicken, it's beef, it's cereal, it's bread, it's, you know, kind of the whole range of stuff. And green foods, which are the kind of the wonder foods because you can eat as many as you want of them. They're very low calorie. They're often vegetables. Fruits are falling into the yellow category for the most part. So it's really designed around that. And there were no forbidden foods. This program, by the way, is one of the few that has long-term success rates, and that's probably the promise of this, that while we are facing this awful obesity epidemic, there are things that can be done, and we're just going to all have to, you know, really tighten our belts and do them.
Well, let's get the listeners involved. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. And Sally's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, first, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm very interested in this subject only because, one, I was overweight as a child, and two, I have two children now. I've recently just lost 44 pounds, and in the midst, obviously, been eating a lot of healthy foods and changed my life.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. But my little girl, actually, I realized what an influence I had on her when she went up yesterday for seconds on a salad. And, you know, most kids are going up seconds for Jell-O and, you know, noodles, and she actually went for salad. And I realized what an influence I have on her. And I just want to, you know, if other parents are listening, they need to do, you know, they need to practice what they preach. So you can't have your kids eat healthy foods if you're not doing it yourself.
And nor can you expect them to exercise if you're not exercising.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's actually research to back that, and there are studies that show that modeling by parents is incredibly important for showing your kids what to eat, which you've just experienced and illustrated so well. So, you know, it's another reason to take a very close look at what's in your home. What have you got there, and, you know, what's going to be tempting?
Okay, thanks.
And Sally, thanks very much, and continued good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And working with families, Dr. Frank, the example of the parents, as we just heard in that phone call, this is absolutely vital because, you know, obviously what you've got in the house and kids follow models.
I don't mean to imply that families and parents are indifferent to the problem. They're not. But they're facing all of the complexity of the world in which we live, and they're facing the phenomenon of this food superabundance that's been cast upon us. We've got a great supply of wonderfully tasting foods, which provide us with a great deal of comfort and reassurance and a great deal of pleasure. And I think the most dramatic example is perhaps restaurants. The restaurant industry has realized that the cost of food itself is a very small part of its cost of business, and that they can give you huge portions, create the impression that they're giving you a great value, a wonderful bargain, and they do that for very little additional cost. And in fact, you do get the sense that you're getting a great value, except that you're getting about three times as much food at a restaurant meal than you probably ought to be eating.
And more Americans are spending more and more of their meals not in the house, but outside. We're talking about kids who are overweight, and we're taking your calls. We're going to take a short break. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Is this something you're dealing with as a parent? We want to hear your story, what works and what doesn't. You can also send us email if you'd like. Our address is TOTN at NPR.org. Back after a short minute, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation. What's a short minute? Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're just talking about overweight kids and what families could and should be doing about this issue. Our guests here in Studio 3A are Dr. Arthur Frank, he's Medical Director of the George Washington University's Weight Management Program, and Sally Squires, a health writer for The Washington Post. If you'd like to join our discussion, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller. And Amanda is with us from St. Louis.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I have a question, I guess, for both Dr. Frank and for Sally. I'm a transcriptionist at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and right now I'm 26. So, you know, the prospect of children down the future, yeah, that, you know, that excites me. But at the same time, it also scares me. What do I feed these kids? And my question for them is, does there seem to be a trend among parents right now? Are they beginning to realize what they're putting into their kids' mouths? Are they beginning to, you know, feed them, on a more healthy basis? Does there seem to be a better trend? Or,
Dr. Frank, what do you know?
We don't know much. But what you want to feed your kids is a good, healthy diet, and it's the same good, healthy diet that you want to feed an adult.
But in answer to the question, does it look like parents are becoming more aware?
I think that parents, it's inescapable that people are becoming more aware. But parents alone can't solve the problem. Even if you have an absolutely wonderful household with a great supportive environment, your child lives in a world in which that child is being deluged with advertising. Food promotion is going to school where there's an enormous amount of peer pressure, where there are school choices about or school delivered food programs. This is a complex problem. It depends upon the community. It depends upon social patterns. It depends upon a certain amount of government policy in order to deal with this. And we've got to take it seriously. The world in general views obesity as a joke. It views obesity as an incidental problem, which is merely cosmetic, and views obesity as willful misconduct, something you've brought upon yourself. And there's no evidence for that whatsoever. This is a complex disease in which there are dysfunctional eating regulators, and only a small part of eating is by choice, only a small part of it, and it's very difficult to superimpose choice on a complex neurochemical regulated system. And what we're dealing with is dysfunctional systems with a toxic environment, and we're doing very little to modify the toxic environment.
Sally, let me put the same question to you, and maybe in a different way. Are parents beginning to notice what they're feeding themselves?
Well, yeah, I think they are to a certain degree, but obviously we've got a big learning curve ahead. And let's look back. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Adele Davis, "You Are What You Eat." I mean, this has been something that that people have talked about through various generations. So we are, in a sense, rediscovering the wheel. But let's face it, we've never lived in a time where there was more food available 24/7 than today. And this isn't just an American problem. This is now becoming a worldwide problem. Countries that used to just only face malnutrition, which obviously is horrible, are now facing obesity. The World Health Organization is involved. So it's not any one thing. And by the way, it's a very small amount of calories that really adds up. You know, just a couple hundred calories extra a week can easily add up to 10 pounds. So, you know, we're not talking it's just a small amount of extra calories and a small amount of not burning enough calories that are really tipping this balance.
Amanda, I'm not sure we got an answer to your question, but thanks very much for the phone call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Shannon, and Shannon's with us from Hiram, Ohio.
Hi, thank you very much. This is just a comment, and I'll keep it as quick as possible. I'm the mother of a 6-year-old son who is thankfully hyperactive, so getting him prodded into action is not an issue. I live in a rural area, so he also has plenty of opportunity to be outside and playing. The issue that I and my other working poor demographic friends run into all the time is that you simply cannot afford to buy healthy food as often as you would like to. I mean, go to the grocery store, walking down the produce aisle and getting vegetables and fruits and plain old meat, the things that you would like to be able to feed them all the time, cost you 3 times as much as filling your cart full of sugar and fat-laden junk. So we're aware of it, but there's not always anything economically that we can do about it. A lot of times we find ourselves locked into making these poor health decisions in terms of food because the paycheck just doesn't stretch far enough to let you load up with good food. I'm not even talking about organic food, which we all know is pricier.
Sure.
But just plain old produce.
Sally, this
well,
seems to be
some,
up your
there's
alley,
some good help
will.
For you here. And first of all, let's look at something that's incredibly cheap and very plentiful and can be used in multiple ways and can even be a fast food, and that's beans. And beans are cheap. You can buy them canned. You can buy them dried. They're very inexpensive, and you can use them in all different kinds of ways. The U.S. Department of Agriculture also provides some very good help. If you go to www.usda.gov and search, there are some places to find low-cost recipes. There are ways to eat healthfully on a budget. For those people who are on Medicaid, receiving some kind of assistance, there are actually coupons that can be used at farmers markets for both the working poor and for the elderly. So there are ways to get around this. But you're right, you are going to have to be a little creative. But it's out there, and frankly, you can eat better than all that junk food.
Definitely. I mean, we do all we can with going to farmers markets and, you know, having our own gardens and so forth. And I'm extremely anal about making sure that at least one meal a day is nothing but home-fixed produce and meat with no extra, you know, sugars or fats. But even so, you know, sometimes
it's a challenge.
Do you want them to eat every day, or do you want them to eat something good maybe once every couple days? Anyway, that was my comment.
Difficult decision, Shannon. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Mm-hmm. Just one quick comment, one additional comment. I think that we get trapped into thinking, viewing the fast food kinds of restaurants as a simple, inexpensive convenience. What it does is it saves time, but it costs dearly in terms of money and in terms of calories. And what you're doing is you're exchanging that convenience, which is valuable, for a big penalty in terms of the quality and the character and the calories in the food you're consuming.
Let's get another call. Paul's on the line from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello, my name's Paul, and my current problem is I married into a family. Thank you for taking my call, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I married a young lady that had two children already. I myself am certified both in personal training and nutrition, and yet I'm finding that for the last 7-8 years, it has been a battle to get my children and my wife to kind of follow along with me.
Hmm.
And how do you deal with that? How do you get them to follow along with you? And yet, I mean, they're at the ages now where they're 12 and 16 years old, and you cannot force them to eat the proper things anymore.
And they can certainly wear you down.
Yes.
Sally, how do you fight the battle of their bulge?
Well, living in a family has all kinds of challenges. And actually, this is a topic we often deal with on the Lean Plate Club, which is a chat and a column that I do for the Post. And, you know, you've got to make this fun and enticing for them. So you've got to find some common ground. And maybe it's pulling them into the grocery store with you when you shop, or maybe it's getting them one night a week to be responsible for a meal that you can all agree on. It's finding an activity that maybe you all love, and maybe that's, it sounds like you're quite a, you do a lot of working out, and they may not be gym rats, you know, so maybe you got to find bowling or biking or something else. But even if it's just, it starts out just once a week, that some kind of common activity that will really draw you all in, and again, will be fun, I think is a really important step.
Paul,
your help.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Won't be easy. It doesn't take we're talking about some of the research that we've heard about lately. Obviously, it doesn't take a research project to know that kids tease other kids about their weight. What's less clear is how it affects children and for how long. A new study in the Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine tries to shed light on the subject. Dr. Diane Newmark-Steiner is one of the study's authors. She's an associate professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota, and she joins us now by phone from Minneapolis. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Can you describe your study for us?
Well, this was part of a larger study called Project EAT, which was aimed at learning more about eating patterns and weight issues in teenagers. And we surveyed nearly 5,000 teenagers in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. The particular study that you've asked about, that you wanted me to talk about here,
mm-hmm.
regards the question of teasing. we asked our teenagers, have you ever been teased or made fun of by other kids because of your weight? And then we asked them the same question with regard to family members. Have you ever been teased or made fun of by family members because of your weight? And we found that a rather large percentage of teenagers do report that they have been teased. Approximately one-third say that they've been teased by peers, and a quarter of the teenagers say that they have been teased by family members. And your program here is focusing on overweight children. The numbers are much higher in overweight. They're about double. So many children and teenagers are being teased about their weight. And, you know, you may think, oh, it's not such a big deal. Everyone gets teased about their weight. People don't take it that seriously. It's a very, very serious issue.
What do you consider teasing?
What do I consider teasing? Well, in this study, it was the teenagers saying, I've been teased about my weight. So it's what they said. And, you know, that can be different things. It can be direct teasing, name-calling. Sometimes it can be something a little less direct. It can be joking around about someone's weight. It can be making assumptions about what someone can do because of their size. It comes out in many different forms. But what we found was it needs to be taken seriously, because we looked at those kids who were teased in comparison to those who were not teased about their weight, and we saw much higher prevalences of binge eating, of overeating, of engaging in very unhealthy weight control behaviors, and also of a poor emotional well-being. So, for example, twice as many of the teens who said they were teased about their weight reported depressive symptomology, that they felt depressed at times, and reported that they thought about suicide. So I think that this shows that we need to take weight teasing seriously. It's not okay. We've already gotten to the stage where we say racism isn't okay. You can't tease people about their race. You can't tease people about being stupid. We now know you cannot tease kids about their weight.
What do parents do when they find out this is happening?
What do parents do? Well, first of all, from our study, we saw that some parents are doing it. And I think when parents do it, they don't necessarily mean it. They don't want to be mean. They're trying to help. They're trying to nudge their teenager along. They're making a little joke about it. So the first thing that parents can do is to stop doing it and not allow it in their own home. The next thing that parents can do is really be aware that this is happening. A parent of an overweight child often faces the problem that they as parents are being stigmatized by society. How could you let your child get so fat?
Mm-hmm.
Or they may be worried about their child being fat. So they may end up putting more pressure on their child to lose weight. What they need to know is their child is facing so much pressure outside, being teased by peers, being teased by people they don't even know, that within their home, they need to make sure there's no teasing going on. They need to work on, they need to work on providing a healthy environment for their children in terms of the kinds of foods that are available and in terms of opportunities for physical activity, but not putting additional pressure on them to lose weight or to diet.
We're talking about issues surrounding overweight kids, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Dr. Neumark Steiner, can you take a phone call with us?
I sure can.
Let's go to Mike, and Mike is on the line with us from Detroit.
Hi, Neil.
How you doing?
Taking my call.
Okay, what's up?
Like she was saying, I just went to school today, and I saw some kids being made fun of. And when they go home, and you know, they feel real depressed, and they eat even more. So it's a big problem right now in school. And
this has got to be like the first or second day of school, right?
Oh yeah, this is the first day of school.
And what did the teasing consist of?
Oh, it consists of poking them in the hallway and just real name-calling when the teacher isn't in the classroom. And I think it should be talked more in conferences and stuff, like when teacher conferences. They should be talked about teasing and stuff, too. And, you know, if the teacher picks it up, they should tell the parents.
You say you've seen it.
Do something about it.
You say you've seen it. Have you ever been, you know, I don't know if you were ever overweight yourself, but have you ever been a victim? Or, on the other hand, was there once a time in your life when maybe you were teasing some other kid?
In fifth grade, I was overweight, and since then, I've been working out a lot, and I've lost a lot of weight. And now I'm on the other side, and I see how they're treated and stuff. And I try to stop it if my friends are doing it and stuff. So if you get on the other side and you see how they're taking it and how you once felt, you try to help.
Well, thanks very much, Mike, and we appreciate it. And hang in there, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Dr. Neumark Steiner, that seems to be exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very painful to hear that. And I think that the person calling in was sensitive to what's going on. He's been on both sides of the teasing. A couple of thoughts. First of all, I don't think that it's the responsibility of the person who is overweight to lose weight so he or she is not being teased, but rather all of society, and we need to see what we can do to stop the teasing. We need to have no tolerance policies for teasing within school. We need to talk about these issues, and that child coming home needs to be able to talk to it with his parents.
Email question, this from, I'm not sure, from Kay, is the way it's signed, but anyway, he or she writes, I think depression is a significant factor in obesity, and depression in children is at record levels. Of my three nephews, one is depressed and overweight, the others are not. What besides blaming lack of self-control is being done to help the overweight children who may be so because of depression? Oh, it's Catherine in St. Joseph, Missouri, so that's who Kay is, and we thank her for her question. And Dr. Neumark Steiner, if we could get a comment from you, and bring in Dr. Frank on this as well.
I think that some people who are depressed will become overweight. But for most, and for some people who are overweight, because of what happens, because they're teased about their weight, because they're living in a society that emphasizes thinness, they will become depressed. So it can go in both ways. For most people who are overweight, it is not due to depression. It's due to what the other guests were talking about, which is the changes in our environment.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Frank?
I agree that it is not typically. People become depressed because of the circumstances of their lives. And although it may be just the reverse, there's a combination of many factors involved here.
Well, Dr. Diane Neumark Steiner, thank you very much for being with us today.
I just would like to add one point, and that is that I think that it's all of our job to speak out about teasing. We've all been in situations where someone has made a negative weight-related comment about someone, about a child, about themselves, about someone else. And if we can speak up and say, you know, that's not really okay, or that makes me feel uncomfortable, or something of that nature, our efforts can go a long way.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Dr. Diane Neumark Steiner is an associate professor at the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota. She joined us by phone. We're going to continue our discussion on kids and obesity after a short break. Again, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're discussing the increase in obesity among children. Our guests are Dr. Arthur Frank, Medical Director of the George Washington University Weight Management Program, and Sally Squires, a health writer for the Washington Post and co-author of the Stoplight Diet for Children. And let's get another caller in. And Verdan joins us from Apex, North Carolina.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Oh, I just wanted to point out the side of the issue from my own experience was that I was rather overweight until about fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, you know, I was teased at school, and I was teased. I wasn't teased by my parents, but it was more of a, are you really going to eat that sort of thing at dinner? And it was always a battle. And eventually, you know, I wanted to point out that it can really have an effect on you because I ended up developing an eating disorder.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're dealing with it, though.
Oh, yes, I'm definitely. I mean, I've been to, I had to stay in the hospital for a while. And I went down to, like, 82 pounds. From, I started up at, like, 180. So I was pretty overweight, but it wasn't fun. Like, just, I constantly felt that, you know, I was being pushed to be on a diet by my parents, by my peers. And I'm healthier now, a lot healthier.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Verdan. Sally, this is an issue for a lot of people, I think.
It is an issue for a lot of people, and I think it goes back to why it's important to try not to have food battles at home and to really find that moderate course of healthy eating and really the joy in eating, but in good food, in healthy food, in fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains and sitting down to a family meal and not making food a big deal. And it's something that, you know, we all slip into from time to time. So it's very pervasive, but it's kind of remembering why we eat and which is for nourishment and to be together.
Well, Verdan, thanks very much for the call and hang in there. Okay.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Bye-bye. Let's go to Holly, and Holly's with us in Iowa City.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say my 13-year-old daughter and I are listening to the show, and we've both been working pretty hard over the summer trying to exercise, and the part that we kind of left out was that food portion and snacking and not realizing that, you know, if you eat a Häagen-Dazs bar after you've swum for an hour, that sort of defeats the purpose of it. And so with the last couple of weeks, we've really been trying, and we're just so happy you have the show on.
Well, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. And we're running out of time, so I'm going to let you go, Holly.
Okay. But thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Dr. Frank, I perhaps almost anticipating the subject of next week's program, a lot of people are going to ask, you've been talking about the importance of the environment and the family and the community. A lot of people are going to say, you know, hey, where does personal responsibility come in this issue? I mean, we're responsible for our own bodies, and you know, does it take a village to raise an overweight kid?
We adults are responsible for our own bodies. Children have a lot of other people participating in the process. Children are not responsible specifically or not exclusively responsible for the food that gets put in front of them. The food that gets put in front of them and the world that they live in which they live, the television world, the advertising world, the peer world, the school world, is thrust upon them, and they really don't have a lot of control. We have to make some broader changes in our communities. We have to make some broader changes in the social, in the cultural world in which we all live in order to make this happen. We've got to make exercise or activity accessible. We've got to make it a way of life. We've got to be able to walk to school. We've got to be able to take bicycles. We've got to make this a wholesome and a useful activity. We cannot rely upon the automobile. We have enormous power of the television set, enormous power of the internet, and what it's doing is it's capturing kids, and they're playing games, and they're doing this, and in many ways there's value in it, but we're paying a big price for it, and we've got to think in social terms, in cultural terms, community terms, if we want to sustain it, and whether we're willing to pay the continuing price for the convenience of our modern world.
Thanks to you both. We appreciate your time today. Dr. Arthur Frank, who you just heard from, is medical director of the George Washington University Weight Management Program. And Sally Squires is health writer and Lean Plate Club columnist for The Washington Post. And thanks, both of you, for coming in today.
Thank you.